And I didn't want to act upon it. I didn't want to, you know, embrace that. And, you know, so it is, you know, for people who are dealing with loss. Sometimes when you, no, that didn't happen. You know, and I give the example in the middle about a dead car battery. You know, you jump in your car and you turn the key and it doesn't start. Well, wait a minute. Maybe I didn't put the key in right. You know, you go into this denial. Maybe I left the light on. I just need to turn the light off. Or maybe the radio, I need to turn the radio off. You start turning all kind of stuff off. No, man, your battery's dead. But you go into denial.
Welcome to Anchored in Jesus, the teaching ministry of Dr. William R. Glaze, founder and dean of the Pittsburgh Institute of Biblical Studies, author, and senior pastor of Bethany Baptist Church. This is Sonia Hall thanking you for joining us today for the first half of Called to Suffer, Part 2. So let's join Dr. Glaze for the first half of Called to Suffer, Part 2.
All right. This is actually the second part. I thought it was going to be three parts, but I think it's going to be four parts of a four-part series entitled Called to Suffer. And we've started out as our basic text in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 21. And we're moving out from there. 1 Peter chapter 2. And verse 21. And it says here, for even hereunto were you called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in his steps. And, you know, there's a whole doctrine out here called the doctrine of suffering, but we don't study that one too much. That's not one that's popular because we want to see all the candy and we want to see all the glitter and we want to see all the gold in the Christian faith. But we need to realize that in our lives, sometimes that suffering will come our way. Let me remind you that there were some that sat here among us last week. Some that sat here among us last week had no idea what was around the corner and come to find out that there was a time of suffering that they had to enter into. So this thing of suffering is not something that if you are walking with God and if you got all the faith in the world, this thing of suffering is not something that will elude you. It comes into our lives. It touches our lives. And we need to be ready to deal with it when it comes. I think that's why so many people's faith sometimes becomes shipwrecked, because they've been promised this pie in the sky gospel. They've been promised this gospel that if you will just believe God, that you can have all things and all the goodies of the Christian faith. And then when a trial or a tragedy comes their way, they don't know how to handle it. And sometimes people will even enter into denial when they come to that point in their life and actually say, this is not happening to me. I'm not going to receive this. And we begin to try to move in another direction. But we're going to look at something today. We're going to look at another aspect of suffering today that hopefully, if you are not in need of this message directly, that you will be able to take this message and share it with someone else. Because I guarantee you that what we're going to talk about today, that there's somebody around you who needs to hear what I'm going to share with you today. Called to suffer. Called to suffer. Amen. Called to suffer. There was a gentleman who was driving down the road one day, and as he was driving down the road, he was on one of the interstates, and there was a horse right in the middle of the road, and nothing he could do. I mean, he couldn't avoid it. I mean, he wasn't speeding, but he just couldn't avoid hitting the horse, and he ended up hitting the horse, and when he hit the horse, he flew out of his car, and the horse went to the ground, and he was maybe about 5 feet from the horse, and the man was laying over there in pain, and he was groaning and just going through a lot of agony and a lot of suffering. And the horse was over there pretty much doing the same thing, going through some pain and suffering. And as the state trooper pulled up,
he saw them lying there. He saw the horse lying there, and the horse was just in so much suffering and agony that the state police said, well, I'll just put him out of his misery. And he took his gun and he shot the horse. And he came over to the man who was lying down. He asked him, was he all right? He said, yes, sir, I'm okay. Suffering, suffering. See, sometimes we can try to sidestep it and say that it's not a reality in our lives. But, you know, we know that it is. And I want to direct your attention, and we're going to spend most of our time this morning in the book of Job. And I would ask that you would turn to the book of Job as we look at this great patriarch of the faith and see how God worked in his life. And one of the things that we see about Job is that Job went through an intense amount of suffering. And we see that Job actually was grieved in his spirit. If you'll pull your notes out also, and we'll look back and forth between our notes and the Word of God today. And we have 4 points that we want to share with you. The vexation of suffering, the viewpoint of suffering, the variation of suffering, and the ventilation of suffering. That's our outline for today. And as we look at it, we want to begin by looking at the vexation of suffering. What does the word vex mean? It means to grieve in the soul or grieve in the spirit. And we see that when you go through a time of suffering, that there's a time of vexation, there's a time of grieving that goes on in the life of an individual. And we see 3 things about Job's suffering, his vexation of spirit. We see, first of all, that Job's grief was graphic, that it was graphic. Look at Job chapter 2 in verse 13. Job chapter 2 in verse 13. And this is when Job's friends approach him. And in verse 12, it says, and when they lifted up their eyes afar off and knew him not, they didn't recognize Job. Now, maybe it was because of the grief that was going through, or he was going through, or maybe they just didn't recognize him because he was at a distance. However, they lifted up their voices and wept and tore everyone his mantle and sprinkled dust upon their heads toward heaven. Verse 13. So they sat down with him upon the ground 7 days and 7 nights, and none spoke a word unto him. Look at this. Look at this. For they saw that his grief was very great. You see, grief is graphic. It says they saw his grief. They were able to sit down with Job, and they were able to see the pain and suffering that he was going through. And many times in our lives, our pain and suffering is evident and is obvious to others. Many times as we go through those difficulties in life, others can pull alongside of us and see that we are struggling with issues in our lives. And let me say this today, that sometimes when people deal with pain and suffering, there are individuals who can handle it a lot better than some individuals can. So they might not have the outward expression as much as another person, but you can be assured down inside that there's something going on. But Job's friends was able to see. It says that they saw. And look what it says here. They didn't say his grief was just great. It says that they saw his grief was very great. Just by looking at him. Just by looking at him. So Job's grief was graphic. Now I need you to stay with me because I'm going somewhere today. Job's grief was graphic. Secondly, we see that Job's grief was great. Look at Job chapter 6, verses 2 and 3. He says, oh, that my grief were thoroughly weighed and my calamity laid in the balances together, for it would be heavier than the sand of the sea. Job said, I wish that we could weigh my grief. Just think about your yard. If you've ever had to do any digging in your yard, and you put it in a wheelbarrow, and you were able to push that wheelbarrow, you know that wheelbarrow was heavy just from that little bit of dirt that you put in there. Job says that, man, if you could see the weight of this grief that's on me, it would be like the sand on the earth. Man, that's heavy. That's deep. That's great.
Job's grief was graphic. You could see it. Job's grief was great. It was just burdening down his soul. And I don't know where you are today. Last week we talked about this whole idea of suffering. And we say that suffering can come in many forms. It can come in the form of illness. Maybe you found out that you've got cancer, or you found out that you've had some other kind of sickness. Maybe it can come in the form of death. Maybe there's been a death in your family and your heart is just heavy and you're weighted down. We've talked about maybe you have been in an adulterous relationship and you know how that can pierce and hit you in the very soul. Or as Brother Allen pointed out in his song today, maybe somebody has gone through a divorce and it was a time of suffering. Maybe you've been a part of injustice on your job or in society. You've been alienated. Maybe you've lost your job, or maybe you have gotten opposition on your job. Maybe you're just in a bad relationship, and that is a form of suffering for you. And so we see here that maybe you are there this morning. Maybe you are right there this morning where your grief might not be graphic as Job's was, but your grief is great. Man, it's weighing you down. Job said, "Oh, that I might be able to weigh my grief. If you could weigh my grief, if you could put my grief on a scale, you would see that it outweighs the sand that's on the earth." Wow, that's pretty heavy. If we could weigh your grief today, if you could put your grief on a scale, how much would it weigh? How much is the load weighing you down? Job's grief was graphic. Job's grief was great. But the third thing I want you to see is that Job's grief was grappling. What does that mean? That means that it got a hold of him and it wouldn't let go. Look at Job chapter 16 and verse 6. Job chapter 16 and verse 6. He says here, "Though I speak, my grief is not assuaged." What does that mean? I didn't know what that word meant. I read that yesterday, a sage. What does that word mean? I don't know what that word means. So once again, putting on our hermeneutical hats, we can go to our Strong's Concordance, or we can go to our Vine's Dictionary, or those of us who are deep like Brother Carl, we can go to a lexicon, and we can look up this word, and we can find out what it means. And what the word means is lessened or lightened. Job said that, "Hey, man, my grief is not lessened at all. It's like being in the boxing ring with a heavyweight champion, and he's just constantly pounding on me, and he's not letting up at all. It's just one punch after the other, and I can't even back up into the corner. I'm waiting for somebody to ring the bell to say that, hey, we can go sit in the corner so I can try to get myself together, but it don't happen. My grief is not lessened. It's just one blow after the other, after the other, after the other. And this grief has got me gripped. It's got a hold of me. And it won't let me go." Vexation. Man, grief is vexing. Suffering is vexing. And you know, sometimes in the midst of our suffering, we don't understand. Well, let me move on. Because I'm going to come back to that. The viewpoint of suffering. The viewpoint of suffering. It amazes me as you read the book of Job. And I would just challenge you today that if you've got about maybe 45 minutes to an hour, that you could probably sit down and read through the entire book of Job. It's 40 chapters, but they move real quick. Man, you would just see another perspective on the book of Job. But as you look at the book of Job, we see that there are different viewpoints of this whole idea of suffering. And as the song said, there ain't no good guys, there ain't no bad guys, it's just you and me, and we just disagree. And as we go through the book of Job, there's a different viewpoint that people look at the idea of suffering from. The author that wrote the book of Job says that suffering is pernicious. Well, how do we know that? Because in the opening chapters, we see Satan. And Satan is after Job. Satan is seeking to destroy Job. Satan is seeking to bring down Job. And the author highlights the fact that suffering is pernicious, that it comes from the hand of the devil. Job, it's like I said last week. To Job, suffering was a puzzle. I don't know why I'm going through this. I don't know why this is happening to me. I don't understand, you know, I'm going to show you here in a second. Where Job said, look, man, you know, I've done nothing but try to walk right. I've done nothing but try to serve God and to do his will. I don't know why this is happening to me. And to him, suffering was a puzzle. And as I said last week, you can read the book of Job. Now, maybe some other way he found out, but if you read the book of Job, nowhere in it do you see that Job ever was told why he went through what he went through. To him, it was a puzzle. And you may be going through something, and you will never, on this side of glory, understand why it is that you had to go through that. Suffering is a puzzle. Well, to Job's friends, suffering was penal. Sin must be punished. Sure, Job, you had another lady on the side somewhere, and you know you weren't telling Miss Job, and maybe that's why Miss Job told you to curse God and die, because she knew that you had a lady on the side. So that's the reason for your suffering. See, they saw suffering as being penal. They saw Job as being punished because he had sinned. Well, he had one friend that came closer than the others, Elihu. And Elihu said that suffering purifies, that Job, God is doing something in your life and that you need to submit to the hand of God because his suffering is going to purify you. And then we even come, as we heard the song sung this morning about the sovereignty of God, that from God's perspective, suffering is providential. And that is, it comes from God's sovereignty. We don't know why God allows people to suffer. Would to God that we had explanations and we could sit down and talk about why people have to suffer. Why does your loved ones have to leave this earth? We don't know. We can't explain that and why it happened the way that it did. It reminds me of the story that I heard about the guy who was driving along the snow-capped mountains. And all of a sudden, he ran into an avalanche. And the avalanche covered his car with snow. And he thought, you know, hopefully God was going to deliver him, that somebody would find him and get him out of there. And he was praying, and he had all faith. And the story goes that Jesus dug through the snow. And Jesus broke the window out of the car. And Jesus sat in the seat next to him, and they both died together. See, we want to hear Jesus dug through the snow and got him out. We don't want to hear that sometimes Jesus will come and sit in that suffering with you. Sometimes Jesus will walk with you through that suffering. Sometimes there might not be any deliverance to your suffering. Sometimes you might cry out and say, God, when is this all going to end? And there may not be any end. Or you don't know when the end is coming. And so from God's standpoint, suffering is providential. God, like we said last week, God is working all things together for good. The vexation of suffering, the viewpoint of suffering, the variation of suffering. Look where suffering hit Job at. It hit him financially. It hit him in his family. It hit him in his body, and it hit him emotionally. Look at some of the things, and we're not going to take the time to look at these right now, but look at some of the things that Job had to deal with in his suffering. From a financial standpoint, in chapter 1, he lost his livestock and his servants. From a family standpoint, he lost his sons and his daughters. From a family standpoint, he got opposition from his spouse. From a spiritual standpoint, there was distance from God. Job cried out, where's God at? Where's God? Why don't he come? In the midst of all that I'm dealing with, from a physical standpoint, he had boils all over his body. From a physical standpoint, he had open sores and the worms were nipping at his flesh. From an emotional standpoint, he said that he had nightmares every night. From a physical standpoint, he lost weight. He had red eyes. He had sleepless nights. He said that his breath was foul unto others. He had peeling skin, and he had a high fever. You're talking about somebody that was suffering. You're talking about somebody that was going through it. And you think you got problems. And you think you've got problems. As you think about what this brother had to go through. That here he was. Chapter 1. Job chapter 1. And there was a man, in verse 1, in the land of Uz, whose name was Job, and that man was perfect and upright, and one that feared God and eschewed evil. Now, you know what? I don't mean any offense, saints. I don't mean any offense now. Don't take this personally. But that knocks out about half of y'all, right? that knocks out half of y'all right now, you know? So there you go. I mean, he was a godly man. He was a man that loved God and that feared God and that he did everything that he could. If he saw evil on this side of the street, you know what he'd do? He'd cross over to the other side. That's how righteous he was. That's how godly he was. And as righteous and godly as this man was, he still had to suffer. He had to go through a time of suffering. And as you flip your notes over, let's try to unpack this and maybe work our way through some of the things that he was dealing with. Now, let me say this, because I know what I'm getting ready to say is probably controversial, especially in fields where people have studied grief and have studied the effects of dying. But there was a book entitled On Death and Dying by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And in this, she identified five stages of grieving. Now, let me say this, because her research was done on individuals who had been told that they were terminally ill. So she didn't really study anybody that necessarily had lost a loved one or who was going through grief or anything like that. Her study was done on individuals who were told they were terminally ill. And when they were told, they found out that they pretty much, you know, went through five stages. Now, this is what I want to say. Because all the reading that I was doing, you know, some people say, oh, there's no five stages that people go through. And then the other ones say, oh, that's just a bunch of baloney and this and that. All right. But let me say this. You know, it's not my objective to stand here and to support or to destroy the research that she did. The one thing that I'm here to do is to look at what Job was dealing with. And as we consider what she identified as the five stages of grief, we can see that these touched Job's life. Now, I do need to say this up front, that when she wrote the book, she didn't necessarily say that you had to go through these five in order. You know, there have been counselors that have told people that, well, you know, you got to sit down and you got to go through, you know, you're in a denial stage right now and you got to go through anger and you got to go through bargaining. Well, no, you don't have to. You know, I think about some things that have happened in my life. And some grief that I had to deal with and some suffering that I had to go through. And I didn't go through all these. So, you know, you may not go through all of them. But I guarantee you that if you've had a loss or if you had to deal with some suffering, at some point, one of these, if not more, have touched your life. And we see that in the life of Job, that these things touched him. And the first thing that she identified, once again, that we can look and see in the life of Job is that of denial. And a lot of people want to deny they're going through suffering. So that's the problem with a lot of this name it, claim it, blab it, grab it religion that's going around today is that, well, I'm not going to receive that. Well, you know, it don't make any difference whether you receive it or not. It's a reality. All right. Now, you know, I understand what's meant by that sometimes that.
Thank you for joining us today on Anchored in Jesus. Tune in next time for the conclusion of Called to Suffer, Part 2. If you would like to request an audio copy of today's message, Called to Suffer, Part 2, you can contact us at anchoredinjesus.org and request Called to Suffer, Part 2. That's anchoredinjesus.org and request Called to Suffer, Part 2. or call us at 877-831-5060. When you visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, you can view many of the other teachings by Dr. Glaze. Dr. Glaze is the author of 8 books. For more information about these resources and how to order, visit anchoredinjesus.org or call 877-831-5060. We also invite you to like us on Facebook at Anchored in Jesus Ministries. If you would like to make a financial contribution, please visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, or send it to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania 15206. Once again, that website is anchoredinjesus.org, or you can send your financial contribution to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania 15206. It's through your prayers and gifts that we remain on the air. Our title, Anchored in Jesus, comes from Hebrews chapter 6, verse 19, which lets us know that Jesus is our high priest and an anchor for the soul. Now, for Dr. Glaze and our volunteer staff, I'm your host, Sonia Hall, reminding you, you don't have to be tossed in the storms of life. Your soul can be anchored in the Lord.